CliffCentral.com. This morning there's lots to talk about in the news, and the Burning Platform, which is brought to you every week by Nando's, is a perfect opportunity for you and for me and for everybody else to get our heads around some of the more complicated situations that are going on politically, socially, some of the stories in the current affairs world that may or may not affect you directly. But at some point you're going to bump into someone and they're going to say, hey, can you believe what happened with Pravin Gordhan at the State Capture Commission? And you're going to go, unless you listen to the Burning Platform, then you're in luck, because Catherine Child's on the line, and we're going to find out from her what we need to know this morning. Hey, Catherine, how are you?
Good, yourself?
Good, excellent. Where are you? It sounds like you're on a yacht.
Oh, I wish I was on a yacht. I'm just back from holiday in Cape Town, and I'm at a coffee shop. Because even though I live in Rosebank, I have dodgy signal, so...
That's all right. It sounds nice and clear. All right, so first things first, I'm looking at an agenda here. Pravin Gordhan has been the big story this week, right? And he's been the big story for two reasons. First of all, he's giving his testimony at the State Capture Commission. And second of all, the EFF have decided to aim their guns at him. So what's going on here? I mean, what's really happening?
Wow, the EFF really decided to go all out at Pravin Gordhan this week. So he was testifying in the State Capture Commission until yesterday midday at the TSO Blackstar building, the owners of Sunday Times. They have an event company, so it's in the eventing company, nowhere near the newspaper. And they have been protesting outside that building. It was so loud. What I will say about EFF is they have stamina. They're not like the DA protesters who, when they saw Duduzani Zuma, Zuma's son, at court, got all excited. The EFF are hardcore. They have been protesting all week. Malema came to address them and called Pravin a dog. I mean, he was really disgusting. He called him the dog of white monopoly capital, blame state capture on Pravin Gordhan, and then said Pravin Gordhan's daughter has been getting all sorts of government deals, which turns out not to be true.
It's completely made up. But let's just start at the beginning, because the real reason that the EFF seem to be so upset is because they've all started to have a rather difficult PR exercise ahead of them. They've got mud on their faces because the VBS scandal seems to get deeper and deeper and uglier and uglier. And it appears that Julius and Floyd have got their feet and their noses and their heads so deep in the trough that all of their promises about being men of the people and standing up for the little guy and being the foot soldiers of the revolution are just complete nonsense. So there's that side of things. They're obviously embarrassed and they need to have an enemy. And this is what the EFF has always done, right? They've always found themselves an enemy. And now it's Pravin. Ironically, Pravin saying that Jacob Zuma was at the center of state capture. Jacob Zuma was the reason that Julius Malema left the ANC. He was their lightning rod for the longest time. He was their enemy. Now, why Pravin? I'm confused. What has Pravin done to them, or what have they done to him?
I'm not actually sure why it's Pravin. I'm not sure it matters. I think it's the politics of deflection. It really is. The whole week we've heard how terrible he is. And the EFF knew that an article was coming out linking them directly to funds from VBS. So we knew that the money from that bank, which was a bank of the poor, mostly in Limpopo, we knew that money had gone to Brian Chibambu. Now, this week, there's a journalist, Paulie van Wyk, who shows, well, it's gone directly to Malema. It went to the house he stayed in Sandton. And she sent them questions on Monday to ask for their right of reply, because she can show how the money went to Malema's cousin and then to his house, which is now owned by the EFF. And they start fighting with Pravin. So it does seem like at least part of their strategy is deflection. I mean, just some of the things they said. There are no roses in a war. There is blood in a war. When you are fighting Pravin, when you are fighting Cyril, they will not in exchange give us roses. So, I mean, he's calling for war. He's calling his supporters ground troops. And it really just does seem like he's trying to get the limelight and have us not talk about how he stole from the poor.
Yeah, I mean, he's also calling for war. He's speaking in terms like a general who's about to go into battle. First of all, how many people did the EFF manage to pull out of the unemployment line to go and join them in their complaints and their protests outside of TSO Blackstar the other day?
It was like 2.5 days of protests.
Yeah.
There seemed to be about 300. They were bussed in, so they brought them in big, huge buses. But what was interesting is a few journalists in the building went down and chatted to them, of course, and some of them thought they were protesting against white monopoly capital, against the media. They didn't actually know they were protesting against Pravin. And this is quite common. If you ask protesters at rallies why they're protesting, they often can't tell you. I mean, I've learned that. Yeah. So it was clear that they were bussed in, but man, can they sing for like 7 hours.
Well, they must. Do you think they get a T-shirt? Do you see what they get at the end of it? Because that's always the most interesting thing for me is how desperate people are that they'll do this, spend the whole day there for a, you know, free lunch in a polystyrene tray and a T-shirt.
It's usually lunch and a T-shirt, although they were keeping McDonald's and the garage shop very, very busy, so they didn't get free lunch, but they got a red T-shirt. And perhaps, and this is me...
Well, the prices obviously come down, that's all.
Something to do. I mean, if you're unemployed day in and day out for years, maybe it's interesting to make a racket for hours on end.
Yeah, it's kind of disconcerting. All right, but Julius's talk here has also been directly at the commission. He called the evidence leader a bastard, which is something that I believe is actionable.
Yes, so according to the terms of reference of the actual commission, which is a legal document drawn up to guide it, if you make disparaging remarks about the commission, you could face 6 months in jail. And I mean, he was more than disparaging. He said they should get out of the building and suggested Tiso Blackstar was benefiting. And he was really, really disgusting. He accused everyone who's been at the commission of lying and said he'll go there and expose everyone's lies.
It seems a little... Yeah. Why are the AFF so desperate? Is it because they've been caught out in their own lies here? Is it because they've been seen to just be greedy like the rest of the politicians? Or is there something else going on? Because he said, I mean, he keeps bringing up white monopoly capital, which we've all already figured out was a Bell Pottinger term that was made up and completely, we were disabused of the use of that word by President Cyril Ramaphosa not so long ago. He said it's absolute nonsense, which it rightly should have been called from the start.
I actually don't know, and I'm not going to pretend to know, but my guess is as the state capture inquiry continues, there'll be dirt on Malema. I mean, it just seems like it could happen, given how angry he is about the commission, referring to the bastard in charge of the commission. I think it's one, he's just trying to stay in the media and get attention. He's brilliant at that. He knows elections are coming up. He knows how to make headlines, and he knows what his followers lack. But perhaps there's more dirt coming as well.
Yeah. All right, so let's talk about Pravin Gordhan's testimony, if that's okay. He spent 2 days in the witness stand. He testified about the dismissal of Nhlanhla Nene. What did you take away from this? Is there stuff that we didn't know that we're suddenly able to get behind and figure out?
I just think what was quite interesting was just the atmosphere that they were facing, that there was so much internal fighting in the ANC, and there was such targeting of him. I mean, the Hawks were going after him, Zuma was going after him, and there was just such factionalism. And I think we know that happens, but it's an insight into the fighting in the ANC. So, and just how much flack he got for doing his job. So he was finance minister. They started looking at why SASSO social grants were being paid by CBS. Was there a cheaper way to do it? Could the banks help? How could we save money? And Batabile Dlamini went and wrote to Zuma and attacked him. So it seemed like and said he wasn't a revolutionary and he wasn't trying to transform the economy. And it seemed like as he did his job, he just got attacked from all sides all the time, month in and month out, and from his own people, from the ANC.
He said he had no relationship with the Guptas, because that's another thing that has been asserted by the EFF, that he was friendly with them and he met with them and he was part of that whole state capture coterie, Musabenzi Zwane and all of that stuff.
Well, he says he didn't meet with them. He didn't go to Saxonwold. I mean, he was quite funny. He actually said he didn't go to the Shabin and have a look for the Shabin. But he does admit that he had met them. So they were present sometimes at those lovely New Age breakfasts that were sponsored by the state, and he would have to go as finance minister and speak. So he says he didn't meet with them. He didn't go to the infamous Sun City wedding of where they were so racist, and one of the Gupta's daughters got married. He just met them kind of as part of his job, but he says he was never friends with them or doing business with them, unlike some of Lema's cronies.
And then he spoke about the offer to Mkhabisi Jonas, right?
The money that was given to Jonas by the Guptas.
Correct.
Yeah, I mean, he did detail a lot of what we really, really know, and I didn't catch that part of that hearing.
Yeah, it was basically about that 600 million to take the finance job, in addition to the 600,000 in cash that he was offered on the spot. I mean, it's the kind of stuff that you would see in a mob movie.
It is the kind of stuff in a movie, the way he details how this all happened. I mean, he explains why he was fired. So he's refusing to back down on getting involved in the Gupta's bank accounts being closed. And so he just gets fired. And he stated in the commission yesterday that he found out on TV. He also said the minute they arrived in London to go and sell the country in an investor roadshow and get money for us, he said he'd hit the tarmac on Heathrow. He was still at the airport when they phoned and told him to return. So it really seems like he was constantly fighting his own party. I don't know how much time he had to actually do his job.
All right. Go ahead.
He says Zuma was very, very dismissive of him. So when he complained about bad expenditure, when he tried to do his job, when he pointed out that the report that showed that he was in part of a plot to get rid of Zuma, Zuma just didn't take him seriously. So, I mean, he just did not have the backing of the president at all.
Must have been a hard place to work. I mean, it doesn't sound very inviting or particularly stimulating. And when you're constantly having to watch your own back and everyone is an enemy, that's not very helpful.
It sounds awful. So now that he's facing all these insults, he's like, that's part of his job. He doesn't mind. But they must come and... he said he's quite happy to be criticized. I think he's used to it. He's used to fighting. But he has said he's willing to be criticized, but the EFF must come under oath at the commission and criticize him under oath and give evidence for what they're saying.
Right.
Which I don't think will happen.
All right. Well, speaking of mobs and companies and people having to change their story, I mean, one of the big things that caught a lot of people's attention this week is the Momentum story. And, you know, a very large part of me is thrilled that this happened, because we're sick and tired of seeing insurance companies taking people for a ride and finding every possible excuse to not pay out for people who've been paying their premiums diligently for years and years and years. And it certainly seems, on the face of it, you know, there's some part of me that goes, these greedy bastards, look at the size of their head offices, look at the kind of profits they make. There's a new insurance company popping up every other day because we need them in this country. And they don't seem to look after us as well. But then another part of me says, actually, a private company has its rules. If you don't follow the rules, you don't get the money that they promised you. It's all in the contract. And I'm not sure where I stand on this. The reports are that Momentum has offered this poor woman, Natalie Ganas, 2.4 million rand. Her husband was hijacked and murdered. And there was huge social media outpouring and uproar. And they've now decided to backtrack on their original position, which was that they were not paying it out because they hadn't received some blood test or some kind of voluntary information that he was meant to have given them about his blood condition, and they're now paying the money out. How could they have better handled this, and how could they have better handled the media?
Well, I think if they just had paid it in the first place, I spoke to another actuary who has his own insurance company, and he said the way it looked to him is that they really were looking for a reason not to pay out. Now, this is someone from inside the industry. Because what happens is you die, and they then, let's say, this is a very common thing that people do. They take out a disability cover if they get a disease, and then 3 months later they claim for cancer. So what the insurer will do is they'll be like, maybe they actually had cancer when they took out the policy and lied, and they'll go back and check medical records, which are quite easy to get. And so often the way that they check is to look for fraud. this person died in a car accident, and actually they were a paramedic, but maybe they said that they were a secretary. So they're trying to catch people out who've deliberately lied.
Right.
But what they actually said in this case is this guy died in a hail of bullets trying to save his wife. There was no logical reason at all, and he's speaking from inside the industry, for them to go and ask about his blood sugar. Like, it just didn't make sense. And he said it certainly came across like they were looking for a reason to pay. Had he died of diabetes or a heart attack, which is linked to high blood sugar at times, it would have made sense for them to look for that.
Sure.
But when there was no dispute about how he died, the fact that they looked really does, even to the industry, look dodgy. And so I think Momentum had what was coming to them. There's such a thing as accidental death insurance from hijackings, crime, falling, being struck by lightning, car accidents most commonly. And usually they will pay for those things if there's no dispute. When they try and look at your medical record not to pay for accidental death, it is dodgy.
Well, I mean, that's the reason that you and I take out insurance, right?
Absolutely. You take it out. And I think what was made everyone so angry here is that really Clavi from 702 previously got involved. And from what she found out, he wasn't trying to hide information. So he took out the insurance. He said, you can have my medical records. You can check my previous insurer's records where they've got details of me. You can speak to my doctor. And he was actually quite open. So it's even disputed if he was really trying to lie about his blood sugar, because he provided them a lot of information from the word go. And what they have admitted is they didn't weight his premiums. He had very low premiums. So had they done their homework in the beginning, he would have had higher premiums.
Hmm.
But, you know, you take insurance for these things, and then they don't want to pay you because of some loophole, when actually, in his case, he'd made a lot of information available.
Right.
So I think Momentum had what was coming to them.
Yeah, and I saw their CEO on TV, and she was like, oh, no, we were always going to pay. And I thought that was also bad position to take. You should at least admit that you screwed up.
The media strategy was so bad. First of all, they had another CEO on Eusebius's show on 702, and he was a disaster. So first of all, just putting your CEO on air, I mean, they're not media trained, they're not necessarily the best at communicating, they're not like you know how to communicate. That was the first disaster. Then he had all these lines like, every death is tragic. So, I mean, he was clearly reading from a legal script. So they don't take communication advice. They speak to their lawyers, and then they give you legalese and just nonsense. I mean, he was terrible. So then I think they got rid of him, and they had a female CEO, and they had a deputy CEO, and they were a bit better. But, I mean, once again, it's, you get the sense that they're reading from a legal script, and that they're just trying not to get into more trouble. And I don't think companies they need to train the CEOs on crisis communication or keep them off the air.
Yeah, and hire a spokesperson who knows what they're doing.
Absolutely. I mean, I just don't know who was worse. Was it the Tiger brand CEO after the listeria was linked to his baloney?
Yeah.
Or the Momentum people? They were equally bad at trying to shirk responsibility on air.
I just want to go back to one thing that you mentioned almost in passing with the EFF story. Polly van Wyk is the one who's managed to figure out, she works for Scorpio, the Daily Mavericks investigative unit. She's managed to find the links directly to Julius Malema and the looting of VBS Bank. Do you, as a fellow journalist, have sympathy for her because she's being targeted personally now? You see Floyd Shivambu going after her with a viciousness that we haven't seen for some time. This is very scary for a journalist. I mean, she's an ordinary citizen. She doesn't have a blue light brigade to protect her. She doesn't have bodyguards like politicians do, like Julius does.
I mean, I do have sympathy. I don't think politicians, and I don't think people even like Trump, should be attacking the media. I mean, at the same time, I think Paulie's profile is growing tremendously, so it's probably good for her career. And that's because she's doing fantastic work, doing a lot of investigation and really showing how the EFF steal from the poor. I also think that, and I may be wrong, but often high-profile journalists, and she has become high-profile as a result of her excellent work, they get threatened and they get all this nastiness on Twitter, and perhaps they need to go off Twitter, but they're unlikely to be attacked. Like, it's just too it's going to look too obvious if someone actually physically attacks them. So that's often the thinking.
You mean in the real world? So Twitter's one thing, but the real world is a totally different thing.
Yeah, people don't often, and it's easy on Twitter to attack people. So I'm not sure whether or not she's had to get bodyguards, and it has happened. I mean, there was a City Press journalist who had bodyguards for months after he exposed fraud and corruption at the water department. They attacked his family. They threatened to attack his family. So it does happen, and I hope it won't in her case. But certainly, she's got a tough skin. I think she can take all the criticism on Twitter. And by them criticizing her and making personal attacks and just being ugly, it shows that they've got no way to defend themselves from the truth of what she's saying. It exposes them further, and it almost proves her point. It shows that her data is strong. They really, really were corrupt. Because all they've got is insults.
Right. Okay, well, thank you very much. It's nice to talk to you, Catherine. Always good to see you and or to speak to you. And I hope we'll speak to you again soon. Have a good day today. Let's hope you can get your work done. Let's hope you can get your work done without too much noise.
There's no EFF today, it seems. I'm really glad. Protests have stopped.
Very
thanks.
Good. Thanks so much. Catherine Child and our update on the burning platform this morning. Brought to you by Nando's. All the stories you need to be paying attention to today. CliffCentral.com